Holding on Lamed Ahmed Bey's second line from the bottom. We discussed yesterday why is it that the Mishnah had said that a person has to toivel every time before they enter the Azara. The Mishnah had said for Avoida, which we said, does that mean only specifically if he's going in for Avoida, or maybe is it on top of that, maybe is it if he's going in for anything related to the Avoida, even if he's not doing the Avoida himself, for example, a Mitzoto who has to stand over there and stick his ear, thumb, and toe in, for the Kohen to apply the blood and the oil to, or maybe actually Tosfos had brought up a possibility, which we didn't really discuss yesterday, that maybe, Tosfos Yishanim rather, that maybe even if he goes in not for Avoida at all, we still want him to Tovel because he may forget and do Avoida. If he's a Kohen, then obviously there's many Avoidas he could do. If he's Yisrael, he could still, for example, conceivably, Shech the Korban. Anyway, so we said that we said two reasons for it. We said Ben Zoma had said because we learn it by a kavachomer, we learn it from a kavachomer from the fact that the Kohen Gadol tovels between his changes of clothing on Yom Kippur, which means according to Ben Zoma, this tvila is daraisa, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, it was rather just srach tvila. It was just like to have the name of tvila in case he was tomei from something else, and then he'll remember and he'll stay away. In that connection, also we mentioned a machlokas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda on the question of does a mitzora need to tovel again, having tovel on the seventh day does he again need to tovel on? Does he again need to tovel on the eighth day before he comes into the Azara? We had one braisa where Rabbi Yehuda says that not. We had another braisa where it seemed like Rabbi Yehuda said like we did, like he does. And we had a number of different ways to explain how we reconcile those two braises. Okay, so now that's where we're holding. Then bottom of Lamed Ahmed Beis. So the Gemara says, Omalei Abayelu Rabbi Yosef, L'Rabbi Yehuda d'Amas Srach Tvila Hizu. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that who says that the whole reason for this tvila, that you have to tovel before you go into the Azara, before you do Avoda or whatever, is just in case he was Tomei, this way he'll remember, and this is, he had, if in case he was Tomei from something else, this way he'll remember and know to stay away. So, choytzetz oy ene choytzetz. Is there a problem chatzitza in that tvila? Given that the whole thing is only drabanan, just in case he was tamei, do we apply the regular rules of tvila to it, including that he can't have any chatzitza on his body? Or no, because the whole purpose of it is only to remind him in case he was tamei. Rashi says the question is strictly according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the girsa that we have in front of us, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Amas Srach Tvila Yizu, is according to that. Tosfos says that actually the question could be according to Ben Zoma as well. Because again, we have Tosfos learns that if a person comes into the Azara even without a purpose at all, he's not coming in there for a particular Avoida, but Ben Zoma still wants him to Tovel because he might do Avoida, that Ben Zoma agrees is only Dirabanan. If he goes in to do Avoida, Ben Zoma is going to say that Daraisi has to Tovel, just like the Kohen has to Tovel between his changes of clothes. And if not, then he's over on an Eser. But if he goes in for what's called Bia Reikonis, he goes in without a particular purpose, and we're only concerned he might do Avoida, then Tosfos learns Ben Zoma will still require him to Tovel, but that's for sure only Drabbanan. So then the question would be according to Ben Zoma as well, which is why we have the words L'Rabbi Yehuda D'Amas Srach in parenthesis here in the Gemara, and in fact, Marsha takes him out on that basis, because obviously in Tosfos's Girsa, they weren't here, otherwise we wouldn't say the question is only according, otherwise Tosfos couldn't say the question is according to Ben Zoma as well. Which Tosfos also points out. Now, we have a number of other cases where the Chachamim tell a person to Tovel. The difference is, in those cases, there's always some Tumah involved. Here, after all, it's not really that the person is Tomei. It's only a Chumrah in case he was Tomei that he should remember. So therefore, are we going to impose on him the regular rules of Tevila, including Chatzitza? So Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef answered him, the usual rule is called the tokun rabbonon kein d'oraisa tokun. Whenever the chachamim make a takana, they always make it similar to the parallel thing d'oraisa. So yes, if the chachamim made a takana according to the Yehuda and according to Tosfos, according to Ben Zoma as well, that a person has to tovel before he enters the azara, then yes, they're going to make all the usual rules of tefillah, including that you can't have a chatzitz. Another question. Omalei Abaye l'Rabbi Yosef, bia b'miktzas shma bia oloi. Here's another question. What if a person is not going completely into the azara? He's only going part way. He's only sticking part of his body into the azara. Does he need to tovel before he does that? Oloi or not? Omalei. So Rabbi Yosef answers him. Bahona seichichu. You can answer. You can prove that from the case of the metzora who stands in shau nikanor and sticks in his ear and thumb and toe. The boyhen means the big thumb and big toe. He sticks in his ear as well. He sticks his thumb and his big toe. He sticks in his ear as well. But the Gemara often uses the word bahonos as a shorthand term for all three of those things. So prove from that, Shehen Bia B'miktzas, there you have a case where a person is only partially entering the Azara, he's only sticking in his ear, or only sticking in his thumb, or only his toe. And Vatanya, and we learned in a Braisa that we said before, Mitzora Tovel V'omid B'shau Nikonor, the Mitzora has to Tovel and stand in Shau Nikonor. So yes, we see that he needs to do that, even if he's only putting in part of his body into the Azara. Now, Rashi explains, again, that these questions are all according to Rabbi Yehuda, which Tosfos points out in the Braisa that we had before. We quoted a Braisa yesterday where Rabbi Yehuda says, Einat Tzarech Tevilah, that he doesn't need to because he already toveled the day before. So if so, then if we're asking according to Rabbi Yehuda, then why, then what's the point of bringing this Braisa, which Rabbi Yehuda himself disagrees with? So Tosfos says, okay, listen, if we see that the Chachamim are saying that he has to tovel even the Mitzora, even though he's only coming in a little bit, then we said before that a Mitzora in a way is worse off than everybody else because Dayesh Betumah, he's used to being Tomei, and therefore we're requiring the Tovel. Fine, Rabbi Yehuda is going to disagree with that and say that a Mitzora is no worse than everybody else and that the Mitzora did have to Tovel the day before. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda would agree with the basic idea that that when any other person goes into the Azara and the Tevilah is only Dirabbanan, then yes, the same way as the Chachamim would say that the Mitzora has to, Rabbi Yehuda would say everybody else has to. Because in general, we try to minimize the scope of the machlokes between Chachamim. So like this, we don't have to say that they're arguing on two things. Number one, whether a Mitzora has to Tovel or not. And number two, whether anybody who comes in for Bia B'Mitzas has to Tovel. We're better to say, it's easier to say that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham are only arguing about the Mitzora or not. Again, because the Mitzora Tovel the day before. Okay. Iboy Lahu, now another question. Mao Sheyasa Sakin Aruka V'Yishchot. What about if a person is Tomei? And instead of, he doesn't want to bother toveling. So instead, now he's a Zohar, he can't do any other avoida other than shchita anyhow. So he's going to stand outside the Azara, reach in with a long knife, and shech the animal. Now, Rashi points out, if he were to do that, if any part of the animal were to be outside the Azara, then it would be possible anyway, because the whole animal has to be lifnei Hashem. But the person who shechts does not, in fact, have to be lifnei Hashem. He can be outside the Azara and just use a long knife. So if he's Tahor, then there's no question about that. But if he's Tomei, would that work? And that way he doesn't have to tovel and he can still do the shechita. And the question is, Tiboy le Ben Zoma, Tiboy le Rabbanon. This question we can ask according to both Ben Zoma and the Chacham. The Chacham meaning who disagreed, Tiboy le Rabbanon, de Pligli Alei de Rabbi Yehuda. And we can ask the question according to the Chachamim who disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda. Where the Chachamim who disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda said that only a Mitzora needs a Tovel before he enters the Azara because Dayesh Betumah, because he's used to being Tomei, and therefore we're more concerned with him than with everybody else, and he might be Tomei. According to those Chachamim, a regular person does not, in fact, have to Tovel before he enters the Azara, which means they disagree with the Tana of our Mishnah that said that he does. But according to them, and the question could also be according to Ben Zoma, who says that the tevila that a person does before he goes into the Azara is actually Doraisa, based on a Kabbal Chomer. Because Tiboyla Ben Zoma, the question could be asked according to Ben Zoma, because Ad kan like mechayev ben zoma el gavoy. You could say maybe ben zoma has only been mechayev him when he actually enters the azara to do avoda. Aval lebroi loy. In this case, he's standing outside the azara, so maybe ben zoma wouldn't have a problem with it. Odoma osila amshuchi. Or you could say, on the other hand, if he has the knife, so fine, he's standing with a long knife, but do we have to be concerned that maybe he might go and follow the knife inside? He might forget that he has to stay outside because he hasn't toveled, and he's going to go and enter with his knife. And therefore, he's in the Azara doing an Avoda, and according to Ben Zoma, he's supposed to be toveling, and then if not, then he's over on an Eser. So the question can be asked according to Ben Zoma. Tosfos Yeshanim says that not necessarily would we apply Ben Zoma's Kavah Chomer, because it's only in case he might go in. But on the other hand, Ben Zoma would say then that he'd have to tovel the Rabbanon. So the question could be, according to him, Tiboy le Rabbanon de Pligi Alei de Rabbi Yehuda. The question can also be asked according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda and says that only a Metzora needs to tovel, but nobody else does. So the question is the other way around. Ad kam kam Rabbanon Hosam de Le Ka'ovid Avoida. You know why the Chachamim are saying that he doesn't need to tovel is because he's not actually doing an Avoida. Aval Hocha de Ka'ovid Avoida Loi. Here, after all, he is doing an Avoida. He is Shechting. Now, Shechting is sort of, it's interesting. Tosfos Yeshanim points out, here the Gemara is calling Shechita an Avoida. We often say that Shechita is not an Avoida, which is why a Zora is able to do it. So what we mean it's not a significant avoida, something that would require a koyin, but it is. The fact is, it is part of the avoida of a korban. We do count it as an avoida for some purposes, for example, as far as the dinner of pigle and whatever. So here you have, we're calling it avoida. Odoma loishno, maybe there's no difference. The Chacham would say you don't need to tovel, period. And the answer is to both those things, take. So we can't be sure if a person uses a long knife, whether Ben Zoma or those Chachamim would require him to tovel first. Tosfos Yeshanim has a different girsa that the question was according to Ben Zoma and according to Rabbi Yehuda, because again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's saying maybe that the Metzora, Rabbi Yehuda says the Metzora does not have to tovel on the eighth day because he already toveled on the seventh day, and he's not worried about this Daish Betuma business, that the Metzora is more accustomed to Tuma, and therefore there's more of a chance that he became Tomei. So the question would be, according to him, he doesn't require the Metzora to tovel on the eighth day, to stick in his ear, thumb, and toe, because he already toveled on the seventh day. Would he say the same thing over here? Now over there, he's Davka standing over there, and he's only doing that. He's not going to walk the rest of the way into the Azara until he's finished with his Korbanos, because his job is only to stand there and put in his ear, thumb, and toe. Here, this guy is standing outside the Azara with a long knife. There's nothing preventing him, nothing to make him forget and not go into the Azara. So would Rabbi Yehuda require him to tovel or not? So according to the Tosfos Yeshanim's Girsa, the question was according to Ben Zoma and according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, in any case, the Gemara says teku, so we can't be sure whether they would require you, dirabanan, to tovel in that case. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said chomish tvilas v'asara kiddushin tovel. The Kohen Gadol would tovel five times on Yom Kippur, and he would do any 10 times he'd be makadish his hands and feet, wash his hands and feet from the kiyur. So let's talk a little bit more about that. Tanan Abanan, Chomish Tvilas Vasara Kedushin Tovel Kohen Gadol or Makadish Beba Yom. The Kohen Gadol would tovel five times and do 10 Kedushin on that day of Yom Kippur. There is, by the way, the Tzemach Tzedek brings an Ora Torah from the Koshinitzer Magid, a deeper reason behind that. Now, the Gemara is going to explain later that it's Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai, that there have to be that number, but a deeper idea behind it is it represents the name Yud-Kei, the name of the Eibishter Yud-Kei. The Yud is related to Chochmah, which in turn is related to Kodesh, and in Chassidus we often use the phrase that Chochmah is Kodesh Elyon, therefore you have 10 Kiddushin, and the Hei represents Binah. And Bina is associated with the Tahara of a mikveh, therefore he goes to the mikveh five times. So he travels five times and is Makadish 10 times. Bekul and Bakodesh Bebesa Parva, all of them take place in the holy area of the Bes Mikdash, above the Besa Parva. The Besa Parva is a chamber on the south side of the Bes Mikdash. We learned previously on Daf Yud Tes that they would salt the skins of the Kodshim over there. Because the skins of the kodshim, the kodshim, the skins belong to the kohenim, the kodshim kalam, the skins belong to the owners. So they would salt them over there to begin the process of tanning them into leather. Later on Daf Lamed Hey, we're going to learn why the place was called Beis HaParva. Anyway, so on top of Beis HaParva, there was a mikveh, and the Kohen Gadol would tovel over there, most of these tevilas. Chutz mirishona, with the exception of the first tevila, shahoyse b'cholo, gabi shar amayim, that one was in the non-holy area, meaning the less holy area, outside the Azara. Above shar amayim. Shar amayim is also on the south side of the Azara. Above the shar amayim, there was a mikveh, that's considered chol. Over tzad lishkasei hoisa, that was next to his lishka. Previously on Daf Yud Tes, we had a sugya where the Gemara discussed which lishka is it near. Is it near the lishka of the where the Kohen Gadol would stay during the 7 days before Yom Kippur, the lishkas pahedrin, or is it next to the lishkas beis aptinas where the Kohen Gadol would practice during the 7 days before Yom Kippur, where he'd practice what he has to do, the manipulation that he has to do with the ketores, taking a double handful of it, putting it in the spoon, and then later on getting it from the spoon back into his hands in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He'd practice it during that week in beis aptinas, so maybe we mean that lishka. The Gemara goes through a whole discussion over there. Tosfos asks the question, there's a rule that the Gemara mentions in Psachim, Gagin va'alias lo niskadshu, the roofs and the upper stories in the Beis Hamikdash do not have the Kedusha of the Azara. So that explains why the mikvah above Shaar HaMayim doesn't have the same Kedusha as the Azara. Why does the one over the Beis HaParva does? So Tosfos goes into a discussion that maybe the Beis HaParva was actually underground and the roof of it was level with the floor of the Azara, and in that case it does have Kodesh, and in that case it would have to mean, and then Tosfos goes on to discuss the exact configuration of the Lashachos, what would make that Lishka would be Kodesh, and how exactly it had to be configured relative to the other Lashachos around it. That's all one answer. The Ravid in Masechta Tumid gives a different answer. He says the Beis HaParva was built later. It wasn't part of the original structure of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, the space where it was built afterwards was already Kodesh because it was inside the Azara. Later on, when they built that chamber there and the mikvah on top of it, then it didn't change the status of it. It was already Kodesh from before, so therefore it remained Kodesh now, as opposed to the Shaar HaMayim was there to begin with, and therefore the mikvah on top of it was Chol. Tosfos also explains earlier that the reason why the first one took place in Chol is, first of all, because it's something that's required every day. We said every time a person goes into the Azara, he needs to tovel for it. To do the Avodah, he needs to tovel first. So it's the same as every other day. There's no particular reason it has to be in the Kodesh. And second of all, but you might as well, before he's even changed into Bigdei Kodesh, and before he's done Kiddush Adayim Ve'Raglayim, it makes more sense that his Tevila should be not in the Azara itself. Okay. We can prove from this that we're saying that there was a mikveh above Shaar HaMayim. Ein etam gavoya mikarka azara esrim v'shalosh amos. Ein etam, which is the spring that fed the mikvois and the Beis HaMikdash in general, that provided the water supply for the Beis HaMikdash, must have been 23 amos, or at least 23 amos, higher than the floor of the Azara. Where Ein Etam is, Rashi mentions that in Sefer Yoshua, when it describes the borders of the Shvatim, when it goes along the border between Yehuda and Binyamin, it mentions a place called Mayan Mei Neftoyach, which is Mayan Mei Neftoyach would be in modern terms approximately where the neighborhood of Givat Shaul is in Yerushalayim nowadays. And Rashi says that is Ein Etam. In fact, and he brings from Gemara and Zvachim that is the highest point in that part of Eretz Yisrael. And originally, when Shmuel and David were researching where the Beis HaMikdash should be built, they figured it should be there because the Beis HaMikdash should be in the highest place in Eretz Yisrael. And then they realized, based on Pesukim, Uvein Kasef of Shochen, that it should be a little bit lower, and therefore it's on what's now the Har HaBayis. So Abaye is saying that now we're going to show that Ein Etam is in fact not only higher than the Beis HaMikdash, but that it's 23 amos higher. Nowadays, there are some people who say that Ein Etam is maybe a place near Beis Lechem. They found large pools of water over there that seem to have supplied the Beis HaMikdash in the time at some point during the second Beis HaMikdash. So maybe Ein Etam. So they say maybe Ein Etam is there. Okay. Anyway, whatever it is, you have to remember water flows by gravity. And water won't go higher than its source. This is why, for example, in small towns, they have water towers nowadays in order to provide water pressure. So therefore, if you want a mikveh, which now you have like this, as the Gemara is going to say, so like this, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah, Kol ha-psachim shoyishim govern esrim amah v'rochman esr amas. All the gates in the Beis HaMikdash were 20 amas tall and 10 amas wide, chutz mishal olam, except for the one of the olam, the front entryway to the Beis HaMikdash, which is 40 by 20. So therefore, we have 20 amas so far. We're going to go on to say that the mikveh itself was 3 amas tall. Now, so therefore, in order for the water to flow into this mikveh by gravity alone, without needing pumps, and you can't use pumps because then it's going to be mayim shorvim, then you need the water source to be higher, to be higher than the mikveh that you're filling up. So since you have 20 amas for the height of the gate of shana mayim, plus another 3 for the height of the mikveh, then that brings you to 23. So where do we see that a mikveh has to be 3 amas tall? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, V'rochas b'sorei b'mayim, b'mayim as kol b'sorei, whatever, when the Pasuk says about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, or when it says about a Zov, as the case may be, that he has to bathe it, his whole body in water, meaning that he has to go to the mikveh, that means b'may mikveh. The word b'mayim means in the water of a mikveh, for a few reasons, one of them being because the word Bamayim means in the water, meaning it has to be special water, the water of a mikveh, not just not mayim shovim. And when it says kol besorei, all of his flesh, all of his skin, that means mayim shekol gufoy oila behen. That means it has to be water that his entire body will fit into. But kamahein, how much is that? Ama alama berum gimel amas. That would be 1 ama by 1 ama. By a height of 3 amas. The Shiru Chachamim, Me Mikvah, Boim Sa, the Chachamim calculated that 3 cubic amas equals 40 Sa. So therefore, 40 Sa becomes the Shir of a Mikvah. In other words, again, if you want that the water is going to flow into the mikveh by gravity and not flow right back out, then you need to. So Tosfos Yeshayahu explained, you can't have, let's say, that the inlet to the mikveh should be like someplace along the side of the mikveh, because then what's going to happen is that then the water is going to be pushed right back out. You go into the mikveh and the water is going to be pushed right back out the channel in the direction of Ein Eitam, and you're not going to have your 40 Sa over there. Therefore, necessarily, the flow into the mikveh has to be above the height of the mikveh, and that means it has to be at least 23 amas tall. Tosfos and Tosfos Yeshayahu ask, so why does that require 23 amas? Maybe let's say that the mikveh, fine, it has to be 3 cubic amas. It could be 3 cubic amas laying down. You have, it's an amma tall and 3 ammas long, and the Kohen Gadol tovels in it. Why don't you say that? And they answer, because we're trying to make things easier for the Kohen Gadol. The poor guy is fasting on Yom Kippur. He has a huge amount of avoida to do, involving a lot of physical effort and a lot of running around and everything. Therefore, we want to make things as easy as possible for him. We don't want to have to make it that he's going to have to lie down on the mikveh over there, which would be hard for him to do.
Question.
So therefore, it had to be that way. Tosfos also gets into a discussion here and in some of the places in Shas. When we say that a person is 3 amas tall, Tosfos over here and in a number of other places learns that actually that means only up to his shoulders. Really, once you add the height of the person's head, then it's closer to 4 amas. So then in that case, how is it that 3 amas is enough over here? And the answer is because when a person goes into the mikveh, he displaces some of the water. So therefore, as long as the hollow which the water of the mikveh is in, as long as there's enough room in it for the water to be able to rise and not spill out, then when he goes in, it'll rise that extra 4th amma and cover his head as well. There are other Rishonim, on the other hand, who learn that no, when we say that 3 ammas is the height of a person, it means head to toe. It's interesting, you know, we have nowadays, we have the famous machlokas of Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah and the Chazan Ish as far as the height, as far as the length of an amma, which affects many other Shiurei Torah, where Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah makes it closer to 18 inches and the Chazan Ish makes it closer to 24. That could be related to this machlokas we're showing him. According to Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, that an amma is only about 18 inches, 3 amas would be only 54 inches. A person of 54 inches is only 4 feet, 6 inches. Your average adult is much taller than that. So then we would have to say, like Tosfos is saying, that there's actually a 4th amma or most of a 4th amma as well, which is the height of his head. Whereas according to the Chazan Ish, you could say that 3 amas means literally head to toe. And fine, 3 amas then is, an amma according to him is close to 2 feet. So 3 amas would be almost 6 feet, which, yeah, that's the height, the most people's height is close to 6 feet.
Can you hear me, Alexander?
Just barely.
Why the Gemara takes the space to the body is one amma by one amma, when in all other halachic areas, it's four by four.
So that's the thing. So why is it that usually we say that a person's area is four by four? So one possibility, again, according to Tosfos over here, a person's body height only from shoulders to toes is three amas. Once you add in the head, then you have four amas. So therefore, we establish four amas as the space of a person. According to the opinions that it's three amas, head to toe, they would say because a person can also be lying with their hands above their head, and that makes up the fourth amma. If the person raises their hands above their head, then that for sure extends well into the fourth amma.
No, but I'm talking in space, not in height.
That's what, well, when a person lays down, then that's the space they take up. So according to Tosfos, a person lies down on the ground or on a bed or whatever, then they're taking up over three amas because their head is attached to their body. And according to the other Rishonim, what it is when the person lies down and stretches their hands above their head, which a person can do that, a person stretches their hands above their head, that's still part of the space that they occupy, that they have control over, then that makes up the fourth amma. Okay. So
it's taking a person laying down, in other words, that's where we get the four amas from. Is it from the person? But a person doesn't lay down usually. They stand. A person stands usually, doesn't lay down.
That's fine, but nevertheless, when we say four amas, we mean the person's space is four amas in the sense that if a person lays down, then that's the area that he takes up. Therefore, for example, we say four by four amas is his space as far as Hilchos Shabbos and Erevin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the Gemara asks, "V'ha'ikra amma tikra v'amma ma'aziva." The question is, though, how is Abaya saying that it's only 23 amas? Don't you also have to factor in above the gate, above the sharamayim? Remember, a mikveh is quite heavy. I mean, 40 saw of water in modern terms is at least 80 gallons. And there are, according to the Alter Rebbe's shitta, which we use in our mikvahs nowadays, we consider a mikveh to be more like 200 gallons. That's a lot of water. You need an amma thick roof above the gate, and you need an amma thick of plaster to be able to hold the water, so the water doesn't the top of the gate doesn't break open from the heaviness of the water, and so the water stays where it's supposed to be. So therefore, you have to add that as well. So now you have then 20 ammas for the height of the gate, one amma for the height of the roof of the gate, another amma for the plaster. So far you're up to 22, and then three ammas for the height of the mikveh, because we're saying we want to make it convenient for the Kohen Gadol, and therefore we don't make it laying down. So we got 25 ammas. So how is Abaya saying that it's enough for Ein Eitam to be 23 ammas higher? The answer is Sha'orim the Beis Mikdash kiven de shisha ninu. The answer is the gates of the Beis Mikdash were made out of marble. Marble is much harder than the material they use for regular gates elsewhere. Therefore, b'mashu of dilahu. Therefore, they don't need a full amma thickness of roof over the gate, and they don't need very much maziva. They don't need very much plaster either. So Rashi said b'mashu avdil, that means tikra shalahen, the roof of them is much narrower. It doesn't have to be a full amma thick. And Tosfos adds also the maziva doesn't have to be very much either. So therefore, you don't have. Okay, so the question still is v'ikra heich mashu. Okay, but the fact is you have that little bit. So why is Abaya saying that Ein Eitam is 23 amas taller when really he should have said 23 and a half or 24 or something? And the answer is just that. Kibin deloy haboy amsa lechoshevla. Since it's not a full amma, he didn't bother mentioning it. You're right that Ein Eitam would have to be slightly more than 23 amas higher than the floor of the Azara. Otherwise, again, it wouldn't work. And when you and otherwise it wouldn't work, and the mikveh wouldn't fill up or wouldn't stay full properly. Actually, Tosfos actually says over here something that even if the inlet for the water is not all the way at the top of the wall, nevertheless, when the Kohen Gadol tovels, fine. If the water is pushed out, more water will come right back in from Ein Eitam. Although that's a little hard to understand because you need the whole 40 you saw in one place. And if you do that, it's not going to be all in one place. Maybe Tosfos would learn. They don't say so, but maybe they would learn that they would block the inlet before the Kohen Gadol tovels in there so that no water can go out. Anyway, so that's what it is. So ein etam is 23 or 23 and a half amos higher, 23 and a fraction amos higher than the floor of the Azara, and that way it's able to feed the Kohen Gadol's mikveh and all the other water supply that we need in the mizmech. The Mishnah goes on and says, "Perisu sodin shal butz v'chola." They spread out a linen cloth as a mechitza for the Kohen Gadol when he's going to Tovel. So maishna shal butz. Why dafka do they use a linen sheet? So the answer is k'de'omer Rav Kahana, like Rav Kahana says later on in the perek, when the Kohen Gadol is changing his clothes for the second time. Here we're dealing with he's changing his clothes for the first time to change into the Bigdei Zahav to start the avodah of the day. Later on, we talk about when he's changing into Bigdei Lavan to get ready to go to do the avodas that involve going into the Kodesh of Kedoshim. So Rav Kahana says about the Kodesh Yakish avodas ayom Bigdei Butz. You put up a linen sheet, a linen screen. That way, he remembers that the clothing he's supposed to wear today for the avodah is made of linen. Hochanami, the same thing over here. Shiyakosh avodah seyim bebigdei butz. You want him to remember that the clothes that he's going to be wearing are going to be linen garments. Now, what does that mean? So it means exactly what it sounds like. But the question is, why did Rav Kahana say his statement only regarding the Mishnah later? You would think, I mean, you already have the Mishnah over here that first mentions the sudden shalbutz. Why didn't Rav Kahana originally say his statement in connection with this Mishnah? So Tosfos says something which is a little hard to understand. They say in the Reisha, in our Mishnah, obviously he needs a heker so that he doesn't mistakenly put on all eight clothes. The problem with that is he does put on all eight clothes at this point. He goes and does the Talmud Shal Shachar and the various other avodas that he does in Bigdei Zahav, so he is putting on all eight clothes. So one explanation of what Tosfos means is that maybe what they mean is that when he's putting on his outfit, he should make sure that he's not putting on with it. Remember, three of the clothes that he wears throughout the year are the same as the ones he wears on Yom Kippur for the special avodas of Yom Kippur, for going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We don't want that he should accidentally take that set of white clothes and start putting them on. Therefore, we need a heker for him to remind him that later on you're going to be wearing that outfit of white clothes. But right now, not. Right now, you're putting on the gold clothes. Tosfos Hashanim says a little differently and a little more straightforwardly that since over here he's putting on the gold clothes, you don't really need a heker for him that he's going to be wearing linen later on. Nevertheless, the fact is they would do that. So Rav Kahana mentioned it later on when he's actually putting on the linen clothes, but in fact they would do it over here as well, even though he's first putting on the set of gold clothes. So the Mishnah says, Poshat, so the Kohen Gadol would undress, Yorad v'tovel, he went down and toveled, Olav and Istapog, and he comes out and dries himself and then wraps himself in a towel. Now there's reasons that Mephoshim give why it's important to mention that point. Among others is because the water might be a chatzitza between his clothing and his body. It might be because after all, you're not allowed to bathe on Yom Kippur. I mean, here he has a special thing where he's allowed to tovel. He has a mitzvah to tovel on Yom Kippur, but nevertheless, we don't want him enjoying the water on his body any longer than necessary. So therefore, we have him dry off. Another reason could be not so much that the water would be a chatzitza, but because there might be something in the water that now lands on his skin, and that would be a chatzitza. And there has to be no chatzitza between the Kohen Gadol's body, between his skin and his clothing. So for any of these reasons, they would have him dry off. Next, Heviu le Bigdei Zahav, they brought him the set of gold clothes, the regular eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol. The Lavash, he gets dressed, the Kiddush Yodav Raglav, and then he does the Kiddush Yodav Raglaim. That is the first of the 10 Kiddush Yodav Raglaim that he does that day. Actually, Tosfos Hashanim points out, we did discuss before back at the end of the first parak, in the beginning of the second parak, the question was, does the Kohen Gadol in fact have to do all the avodas on Yom Kippur, even the ones that are usually done by other people? For example, does he have to do the Terumas Hadeshen or not? So if we say he has to do the Terumas Hadeshen even on Yom Kippur, then it means he had to already do Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim for that. So in that case, it would come out that this is already his second one. However, that one's not counted because that one was during the nighttime. We're talking about for the avodas of the day. And also, first of all, that one was during the nighttime. And second of all, he has a break between that and the next avodah, whereas everything else after this keeps on going continuously and is throughout the day. So when we say that he has 10 Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim, according to that opinion, it means beginning from daybreak, as opposed to before daybreak, before dawn, when he does Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim, then he would have to do another Kiddush. Then before he does Terumas Hadeshen, then he'd have to do Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim for that. It is true, according to the opinions, that he doesn't have to do Kiddush Yadayim Ve'Raglayim, that he doesn't have to do Terumas Hadeshen. According to those opinions, of course, he didn't have to up until this point. This is really the first one that he's doing that day. Okay. Anyway, hey, Ve'Ulayis Atomid, they brought him the Korban Tomid. Krotzai, he shechts it. Now, the usual word for it would be shchatai. The Gemara on Lamed Beis and Beis, which we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, explains why we use this unusual word krotzai. Somebody else finishes the shchita al yadai. Now, the point is, Rashi says, because the Kohen Gadol needs to do the Kabbalah Sadam, he needs to catch the blood in the basin, and he needs to be able to get as much of it as possible. If he were to shech through the entire neck of the animal, like you usually do, he wouldn't have time to get ready and be there with the bowl. Therefore, he just cuts through the major part of the two simonim, which is the minimum you need for kosher shchita, and then somebody else finishes up the shchita, and then the blood starts gushing out, and he collects it in the mizrach. What does al yodeh mean? Rashi says two explanations. Al yodeh can mean on his behalf. So somebody else finishes the shchita on his behalf. Or al yodeh could mean right afterwards. He does the first part of the shchita and another kohen does the rest of it right afterwards. Rabbeinu Al-Yakim, one of the Rishonim, a Talmud of Rabbeinu Gershom, was a Pirush on Masech de Yoma, actually learns that throughout the year, the Talmud was shechted that way. You always had two Koyanim, one doing most of the Shechita and the other one completing it, and then that way the first one could do Kabbalah. Most of the Rishonim don't learn like that. They learn that's only on Yom Kippur we did that. Next. Kibbalah Saddam Bezerkah, he received the blood in the basin, and he took it over to the Mizbeach and sprinkled it on the Mizbeach, like you usually do with the Korban Oila. Nichnas Lahakir Ketores Shal Shachar, then he goes into the Heichel to bring the morning Ketores. This isn't the Ketores that he brings in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's going to be later in Big Day Lavan. Right now, we're dealing with the regular daily Ketores that you bring twice a day. So he goes in to do that. Ulahetiv Asaneris, and to prepare the lamps of the menorah. Most Rishonim learn that Hatovas Haneris means only preparing them, cleaning out the ashes and the old ashes and oil and whatever, or the old wick, putting in a new wick, putting in new oil. According to the Rambam, it also means lighting it. According to the Rambam, they lit the menorah twice a day. According to everybody else, they only lit it once a day in the evening. So he goes in to do that. And then he also goes and offers the head and the rest of the limbs of the Korban Tamid on the Mizbeach. Which again, usually you would have a bunch of Kohenim doing that, as it said in the previous parak. Here on Yom Kippur, where he has to do the whole Avodah himself, then he has to take up all those pieces and bring them to the top of the Mizbeach and throw them in the fire. The reason why we mention the head separately, by the way, is because all the other limbs of the Korban, the skin is stripped off before they offer them on the Mizbeach. The head not. The head has been cut off during the Shechita, and they don't skin it afterwards. So therefore, it needs to be mentioned separately. It needs to be mentioned separately because it's like in a different category than them. Okay. Also, v'hachavitin. Also, the Kohen Gadol is then makriv, the minchas chavitin. The Kohen Gadol himself offers a Kohen mincha every day, half of it in the morning, half in the evening. It's called minchas chavitin. On a regular day, the Kohen Gadol pays for it, but he is not necessarily the one who has to be makriv it. Anybody else could do that. But here on Yom Kippur, he has to actually be makriv it on the Mizbeach. V'esayayin, and he also offers the wine that goes together with the Kohen Tamid. He pours it on the Mizbeach. An interesting point over here is the Mishnah is not mentioning the mincha. You have the korban ola, including the korban tamid, comes together with a mincha of flour and oil and also wine. So here we're mentioning the minchas chavitin, which is a separate mincha. Why aren't we mentioning the mincha that goes together with the korban? So, okay, they have, you know, one on one level, what it is nesachim. The general term nesachim includes the flour as well. Still, Tosfos Yomtov on the Mishnah wonders why it doesn't mention that. The Rashash gives an interesting idea. He says, because the halacha is you don't have to bring the nesachim with the korban. You can bring a korban, and then later on in the day, or even a few days later, you could bring the nesachim of it. Now, when it comes to the wine, we don't want to do that, because when the wine of the korban is poured on the mizbeach, that is when they sing shira. So therefore, we're going to want to do that at the same time the korban is brought. On the other hand, the mincha, the flour and oil that's brought together with the korban, that there's no particular thing. It has to be brought right then. So therefore, they might not burden the kohen gadol with it. They might just leave it for another time and have a kohen head do it. So therefore, he says that's why the Mishnah doesn't mention it. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. You should know, by the way, on every day of the year, the Keturas in the morning is brought between the dam and the Evarim. They would sprinkle the blood of the Korban Tomid on the Mizbeach. Then they would do the Keturas. Then they would bring the Evarim and burn them on the Mizbeach. We're going to learn in the Gemara, beginning on Daf Lamed Gimel, we're going to learn an extensive discussion about the actual order of the Avodas every day in the Mizbeach Mikdash. There we're going to mention Abaya Hava Masader, and we're going to go through it phrase by phrase and explain where we learn it from and what the exact Seder was. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, by the way, disagrees with that Seder, because in the morning davening, we say Dama Tamid, well, it's not totally disagreeing, but in morning davening, we say Dama Tamid Kodem La'atavas Shtei Neris, La'atavas Shtei Neris Kodemus Ketoras, or Ketoras Kodemus. So the mission over here, fine, it's not really disagreeing. The mission over here is mentioning Torahs between Dam and Evarim, where in fact there was something else also, according to Abaya HaMasader, there was also Atovas Shteneris. But we're going to see in the Gemara that there's a machlokes about that. Shalben HaAbayim ben Evarim l'nesachim. The one in the afternoon, by the afternoon Tamid, the Ketoras was brought, they would bring the limbs of the Korban onto the Mizbeach. Then they'd bring the Ketoras, then they would bring the Nesachim, the flour and wine and oil that go together with it. Mishnah continues. If the Kohen Gadol was old or he was delicate, now in those times there was no such thing as heated mikvahs. So if he's old or delicate, how is he going to toivel over and over in a cold mikvah? Then they were allowed to heat up hot water for him from Erev Yom Kippur, or Matilim L'Sechat Sonin, and then on Yom Kippur they pour that hot water into the mikvah. In order to warm up the mikveh a little bit, Rashi explains the word shetofig means like to change something, so to change it from a cold mikveh into a slightly warmer one. So even though actually Rabbi Akiva Eger says that the reason why the Mishnah puts this here rather than before in connection with the tefillah itself is to tell us that they only do this, he says. After all, it would be an issu d'rabbanan to do this, to pour hot water into the cold water. What if you pour in too much hot water and then you're boiling the water on Yom Kippur, which of course it's also in Malacha. So for the other four tefillas, for the ones that are taking place in Kodesh, we'll give him that kola and allow him to do that. But the first one, which takes place in Chol, he says we don't have that kola. There he's going to have to tovel in a cold mikveh whether he likes it or not. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that for this reason, the Kohen Gadol was not allowed to be a member they would have a small group of the Sanhedrin, three, beginning with three, continuing with five, then seven people who would decide whether we're going to make an Ibo Yor this year. So the Kohen Gadol was not allowed to be on that tribunal. Because since the Kohen Gadol has to toivel five times on Yom Kippur in a cold mikveh, and we're saying only if he's old or weak do we allow, we'll at least pour in a little hot water in order to warm it up, we're concerned he may want to say, let's not make an Ibur Yor, because he'd prefer that Yom Kippur comes out earlier in the secular year, still during the summertime, so it's warm, and that way it's not quite so uncomfortable to toivel in a cold mikveh. So we don't want him on that tribunal. Okay. The Gemara says, Amru Rabbanan Kamei Rapapa. Now, the Chachamim said to the Papa, now what are we saying in the Mishnah? We said he goes, he gets undressed, he toivels, then he dries himself off. Then after he gets dressed, he does the first Kiddush Adayim Raglayim of the day. So the Chachamim said to the Papa, Hodolai Kereb Meir. It seems that our Mishnah is not like Reb Meir. The Ereb Meir, given, now later on in Daf Lamed Dalet, we have a Mishnah where Reb Meir says, that you have like this, when it comes to the next Tvila of the Kohen Gadol, Reb Meir says over there that what he would do is he would take off the set of clothes, then he would do Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim, then he would go and toivel, and then he would get dressed and do Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim instead. In effect, in other words, Reb Meir is saying that both Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim have to do with putting on a set of clothes. Whereas the Chachamim, they would disagree and say that no, he does Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim, then he takes off the clothes and then continues from there. So Reb Meir is associating the two Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim with the change of clothes. Well, therefore, so our Mishnah, which says that he's only doing Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim once, well, the Ereb Meir, given to Amatrei Kiddushi Alavisha Avid Lahu, he says that both Kiddush Adayim Raglayim later on have to do with the getting dressed. Therefore, one of them is after he takes off the previous set of clothes, and the other one is after he puts on the next set. Well, Hocha Nami Levit Tirei Kiddushi Alavisha. The same way over here, the mayor should be requiring him to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim twice in connection with putting on the Big Day Zahav, and our Mishnah is mentioning only once. Amalahura Papa. So the Papa says to them, no. Bein l'rabbanan. And Bein Rav Meir had apshita to big the Kurdish, but had alavisha. No, both the Chachamim and Rav Meir would agree that the two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim that he has in connection with each of his other tefillas, one has to do with taking off the old set of Kurdish, and one has to do with putting on the new set of Kurdish. So therefore, in this case, so Rav Meir would agree he doesn't need two, because what he's taking off to begin with is not Big Day Kodesh. What he's taking off to begin with is his regular clothes that he wears every day in the street. So for that, you don't need a Kiddush Adayim Raglayim when he's taking those off. So what is the machlokes? The machlokes between the Chachamim and Rav Meir, when it comes to, again, does he get undressed, then do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, which is what Rav Meir says, or does he do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, then get undressed, which is what the Chachamim say, the machlokes is based on how we understand the pasuk. The pasuk says, or poshat, the Kohen Gadol should take off the clothes. Then it says, verochat, that he should wash himself, which the Gemara explains later means Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. And then verochat v'lavash. Now, the next thing the pasuk says is that he dresses it, that he puts on his clothes, but in between them you had the word verochat, and therefore the Gemara explains, we're doushening as if it said the word verochat twice, as if it said the word verochat in connection with the pshita and in connection with the levisha. So the result is that he's actually said that's where we learn that he does two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim one in connection with the taking off the clothes and the other one in connection with the putting them on. So in that case, the machlokes is as follows: Rav Meir Sava Makish Pshita Lulavisha. The Chum say that being the case, we have a hekish between taking off the clothes and putting on the next set of clothes. Ma Lavisha Loibash Vahakach Makadish. When he gets dressed, we're saying he puts on the clothes and then he does the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. Afshita push it v'achakach makadosh. The same way when it comes to the first Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, it has to be in connection with the uposhat, and it has to be in that order: the uposhat, then the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, then the v'lavash, and the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. So that way they're consistent. V'rabbanan sabri makdish pshita d'levisha. The Chum agree that there is a hekish between taking off and putting on, but they say ma levisha k'shu lavash makadish. Just like the levisha, he's doing the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim when he's already dressed. Apshita k'shu lavash makadish. The same way, when it comes to the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim in connection with the undressing, it means he does it while he's still dressed. Which Tosfos Yeshanim points out that. If she has to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim from the pier, you can't expect what is he going to be standing there naked in the Azara, according to the mayor? No. What he would do is he'd cover himself with something. He'd cover himself with a towel or a robe or something, and he'd do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. But he's not wearing any big de kahuna when he does the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, according to the mayor, whereas the Chum say he is. So therefore, so the Papa says, in this case over here, he's not changing out a Big Day Kodesh, he's changing out a Big Day Chol. Therefore, the mayor is going to agree that he has to do only one Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, not two. So our Mishnah works according to the mayor as well. However, Amru le Rabbanan le Papa, however, the Chachamim asked the Papa, or mi matis amritachi, how could you say that Rav Meir, in our case over here, when he's doing the first tvila of the day, requires only one Kiddush Adayim Raglayim? But Hatanya, we learn in a braisa, persu sodin shal butz bein levein am, they spread a linen cloth as a mechitza between him and the people, poshat, he undressed, v'yorad v'tavol, He went down and toveled, all of an estapak. He came out of the mikveh and dried himself off. They brought him his gold clothes. The lavash, he got dressed for Kiddush Adayim Raglayim and did Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. That's exactly what we said in the Mishnah. But here the Braisa adds, Rameo Omer, no, Poshat, the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. He undresses, he does Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, the Yodav Tovel, he goes and toivels, all of an estapak. He comes out and dries himself. They bring him the Big Day Zahav, the lavash, and he gets dressed for Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. So yes, we see that. According to the mayor, he does need two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim in connection with his change of clothes, even though this is the first tvila and he's changing out a Big Day Chol. So how can you say that a mayor would say that he doesn't need a second Kiddush Adayim Raglayim over here? Amalahu. So Rav Papa tells them, okay, itanya tanya. If it says explicitly in a braisa that Rav Meir requires two kiddushim, okay, then it says that, and then I withdraw my opinion. But if in other words, Rashi says, Rav Papa is telling them, I would have understood the next Mishnah differently. Like we said before, the Meir and the Chachamim are not really arguing about, are not really arguing whether the two Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim are in connection with the getting dressed, or whether, or no, Rav Papa is saying both of them agree that one has to do with the getting undressed and one with getting dressed. So fine, since you find a Braisa that understands Rav Meir differently, then I have to accept that that's how Rav Meir says it. But if it hadn't been for that Braisa, then I would have maintained my opinion, and we couldn't have said just based on the next Mishnah that our Mishnah is not like Rav Meir. Okay, so the question now is, so according to Rav Meir, we understand how you wind up with 10 Kiddushin, because you have two before he tovels the first time. And then for each of the other, he has one before he tovels the first time, one after he tovels the first time, and then the same thing for each of the four tefillos, one before, one after, so that winds up with 10. Elo l'rabbanon tishahavu, but according to the Rabbanon, you seem to have only 9, because they don't have, according to them, you only do one Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim after the first tefilla, so you don't do one before, so where do you have the 10th one? The answer is, Amri lach rabbanon. The answer is the Chacham will tell you kedusha basra ki poshet bigdei kodesh v'lovish bigdei chol ovid lehasam. After the fifth tevila, when he takes off the bigdei kodesh for the last time that day and puts on bigdei chol, that is where he would do the 10th kiddush. So in other words, according to the Chachamim, according to the Meir, the 10 kiddushim are 2, 1 before and 1 after the first tevila. And the same way, and then the same way after each of the other ones. According to the Chachamim, what you have is one after the first tefillah, the second and third after the second tefillah, fourth and fifth, sixth and seventh, eighth and ninth, and then the 10th one is after the fifth tefillah, when he's changing back into weekday clothes. Okay, talking about these 5 tevillahs and 10 kiddushin, Tanan Rabbanan, the pasuk says va Aaron al oil moed. The pasuk says Aaron comes into oil moed. Lama hu ba? What is he coming in there for? Now the pasuk previously describes how he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to bring the Torahs. Later on, it says after it describes he does the avoda with the blood of the par and the blood of the sower and so forth. Then the pasuk, and he does smicha on the sur la'azazel and sends it off to Azazel. Then the pasuk says Aaron comes into oil moed and he takes off the linen clothes that he wore when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he leaves them there. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean Tosfos Hashanim says you can't say he's going into the Heichel to get undressed. There's no reason to assume he would have to get undressed davka in the Heichel. That's not an avoda. So lama hu ba, what is he going in there for? It means ene ba ela lahotzias kafes amachta. Means that he's going in specifically in order to take out the spoon and the pan that he brought in there with the Ketores. Earlier in the day, he brought those in. He left the pan of coals with Ketores on them burning in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He left the spoon over there. Now he comes in later, again, wearing the white clothes, the linen clothes, in order to take them out. The whole parasha is said in the proper order, except for this pasuk. This pasuk is out of order. And in fact, it belongs after a couple of psukim later, when it says that he does Eloi ve'Eloam, when it says that he does the korbanos, his own ram and the ram of the people, which are part of the korbanos of Yom Kippur, that's where the pasuk Uva Aaron al Oyel Moed belongs. So the Gemara says, my timer, why do we have to say that? Why do we necessarily have to say, maybe it means after the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, maybe he goes in there shortly afterwards and takes out the Kaf and the Machta. Who says that there's another Avoda, another set of Avodas in golden clothes between? Amar Rav Chisda, Gmiri, because we have the Kabbalah, for Chomesh Tvilas Fasorah Kedushin, Tovel Kohen Gadol Makadosh Beva Yom. The Kohen Gadol tovels 5 times and does 10 kedushin on Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. The Ikasidra. Now, if you said the Psukim are in order, if Uva Aaron al Oyel Moed is in fact right after going and with the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he's still wearing the same white clothes, then Lomashkachas the Shalosh Tvilas for Shisha Kedushin. Then you only come out that he's toveling 3 times and doing Kiddush Adayim Raglayim 6 times, because then you would have he starts out in Big Day Zav and does the morning Talmud and the other Avodas with it in Big Day Zav. Then he would change into Big Day Lavan. Then he'd change into Big Day Lavan. And again, each time he's toveling, he's doing two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. He's changing into the white clothes, doing all the Avodas, the girdle on the two Seirim and the blood of the and the Ketores and the blood of the Par and the Sur. And then hypothetically, if we also said that then he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and takes out the Kaf and Machta, that's all. now he's done everything in Big Day Law, in Big Day Lavan. Now he tovels, changes into Big Day Zahav, does the rest of the avodas of the day, the Musafim and the Tomat Rabbein Habayim and so forth. And so you only have three tvilas and only six kedushin. And we know there have to be 5 and 10. That forces us to say, therefore, that there are two times when he changes into Big Day Lavan. One of them is to go in order to do the Ketodas and the blood of the pyre and the sire. And the other one is later on to take out the calf and the machta. And that way we have five changes of clothes. Gold, linen, gold, linen, gold. In that order. So that's it. So that's that. That's where we learn it from. So there's an interesting point, actually. So they ask, in that case, why did the Torah do that? Why did it put this pasuk out of order? Put it in order a couple of psukim later, after Eilev Eilam. There's an interesting answer given from the Vilna Gaon, which is, that when the psukim talk about it, now he learns that when the psukim say over there, Hashem says at the beginning to Aaron, don't just enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever you want. So Rashi on the pasuk explains over there, it means only on Yom Kippur and only with this whole avoda that we're describing in the parasha. The Vilna Gaon learns what it means is that Aaron, uniquely Aaron, not any Kohen Gadol after him, but only him, was actually allowed anytime he wanted during the year to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he could. However, he has to bring the Korbanos that it says in this parasha. Now, any day he does that is not Yom Kippur. So there's no Korbanos Musaf, and you don't have certain of the other details of Yom Kippur, but you do have, he would have to bring a pyre and a sire. He'd have to bring a ram of his own and a ram for the people. So then if you work it like that, since on a regular weekday, there's no more Safim, then in fact, you don't have anything to break it up. And then in fact, then it would be ala seder. He goes in and does the Ketodas and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then he returns shortly afterwards, takes out the Kaf and Machta, and then changes into Big Day Zahav and continues the rest of the Avodah on the day. On Yom Kippur, it wouldn't be like that, because in Yom Kippur, we have a Halach HaMosh Messina. They have to have 5 and 10, but any other day during the year, if Aaron wants to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then in fact, he does need only 3 and 6. And then he's only changing into Big Day Lavan once. And he is, in fact, taking out the Kaf and Machta in its proper place in the Pasuk before he does Eilev Eilam. Okay. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with talking more about these five changes of clothes and what we do as far and where we slot in the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim with them.
Shkayach.
Yeah.
Right.